This is the TTY Dialer, episode 27 for the week of May 1st through May 6th. Hello and welcome to your weekly companion to WRVO Public Media's nightly old-time radio show tuned to yesterday. I'm Mark Livonier. Every night of the week we bring you old-time radio comedy, drama, mystery, suspense, western, sci-fi, and much more, broadcast in your theater of the mind from a tape collection of over 15,000 broadcasts. And this podcast brings you fun with sound from those reel-to-reel tapes, also radio history, and a look at the shows coming up for the week on Tune to Yesterday, which we'll get into in just a few moments. But first, a question.
If you were asked what it is that makes possible the world's highest standard of living here in the United States, you would find it pretty difficult to single out any one thing that contributes more than any other to the production and distribution of America's vast wealth of goods. For really, it takes a combination of our rich natural resources, our unparalleled agricultural production and industrial capacity, and the freedom of enterprise of our people to turn out all the things we need and use in our daily lives and must have for our defense. And essential to this combination is our continent-wide mass transportation system, whose backbone is the nation's railroads. Day in and day out in all seasons and in all parts of the country, trains are ever rolling, carrying raw materials and finished goods, the products of farm, forest, and mine, of mill and factory. These trains are doing the nation's big transportation job, supplying the basic service that this big country must have. For our railroads produce more intercity freight transportation service than all other forms of transportation combined. And only railroads can do a job like this, and do it with an overall economy in the use of fuel, materials, and manpower, which no other form of transportation offering general services even approaches. Without this basic, all-commodity, and low-cost moving job being done by railroads, we could not produce and live as we do. That's why it's so important to all of us that these essential railroads be allowed to keep themselves strong, ready to go on meeting the big needs of our big commerce and the growing demands of national defense. To be able to do this, railroads must be permitted to charge freight rates, which will produce revenues adequate to meet their cost of operation and yield earnings that will attract the capital investment necessary to continue their large-scale program of improving their service for the nation and for you.
From 1950, that was a commercial for a mode of transportation for people and goods well used up to that point, the railroad. The Association of American Railroads actually sponsored a program of operatic and Broadway music for about 6 years on NBC, known as the Railroad Hour program. Singer Gordon McRae was featured in all the male parts in every broadcast, along with an esteemed rotating cast of female leads like Dorothy Kirsten and Dinah Shore. It was heard every Monday night at 8 during NBC's block of music that was really popular among listeners in the late 1940s and early 50s. And though we don't see too many advertisements for trains and their services today necessarily, during that period, the American Railroad was losing business to the emerging airline industry and expanding trucking services that competed fiercely to deliver the goods. And we can only assume that their self-directed applause on the air, which at times actually waxed political, made some sort of impact from keeping the industry from going completely off the rails. This Monday night on Tune to Yesterday at 10 o'clock, we have an hour of mystery from broadcasts of Box 13 with movie star Alan Ladd and a precursor to Jack Webb's Dragnet series on the air called Pat Novak for Hire from 1946. At 11 o'clock Monday, it's Westerns with episodes of Frontier Town and Half Gun Will Travel. And this Tuesday, May 2nd at 10 o'clock, it's comedy from The Fred Allen Show, then Let Yourself Go, a program featuring Milton Berle. At 11 this Tuesday night, an hour of true history from one show, it's Biographies and Sound, bringing us the program Winston Churchill, His Finest Hour.
In this country, we recall with heartfelt admiration and gratitude the peerless leadership he gave to us all in the grim days of the war, when the Commonwealth, unaided, was fighting the forces of evil. Sir Winston, in those days, had become far more than the Prime Minister of any one country. For all of us, his voice was the voice of human freedom and he represented the symbol of the unconquerable spirit of free men and women faced with terrible odds.
Hear these programs this Monday, May 1st, and Tuesday, May 2nd, from 10 to midnight on Tune to Yesterday, on the air on WRVO, if you're in the central and northern New York area, or where we stream live at our website, which you probably already know, WRVO.org. It was on the Saturday night, May 6th in 1937, that a harrowing disaster took place at the Lakehurst Naval Air Station in Lakehurst, New Jersey. And out of the tragedy came one of the most famous and really unnerving recordings of that decade.
How do you do, everyone? We're greeting you now from the Naval Air Base at Lakehurst, New Jersey, from which point we're going to bring you a description of the landing of the mammoth airship Hindenburg, which was due here in America this morning at dawn, completing the first transatlantic crossing of the 1937 season. Charlie Nielsen, one of our WLS engineers, is here at my side working the controls.
A true catastrophe would be described by Herbert Morrison moments later as the German airship Hindenburg exploded, killing 36 people while setting down at the airfield. It was a blimp-shaped ship known as a Zeppelin and was and still is the largest recorded aircraft to ever take flight at 803 feet in length and 135 feet in diameter. In the 1930s, the Hindenburg and the Graf Zeppelin were the first two ships to provide consistent transatlantic air service. And leading up to the Hindenburg's fateful day, it had already flown hundreds of passengers many thousands of miles. And after scientific investigation, it was concluded that the fire and then explosion was caused by the cotton fabric covering the ship, which was covered with an extremely flammable cellulose acetate coating required to keep the craft waterproof, ignited. On top of this, there was an aluminum powder mix applied to the ship, which was actually prone to sparking if conditions were right, which they were on the day of the disaster. What happened was an incoming storm helped to build up static electricity in the air, and then when the mooring ropes were released from the ship and hit the ground, the static was then connected, which set those fatal sparks that caused the Hindenburg to burn and collapse in just about a minute. Now, we heard a moment from the on-the-scene report just a few moments ago, and that was given by Herb Morrison, with a sound engineer who were at the airfield covering the event for Chicago station WLS, to be played back after the landing. Now, that wasn't something too common at the time in days of live radio, and a practice seldom used for news events or radio drama. And their recording equipment wasn't exactly an over-the-shoulder unit, but a transcription disc recorder 16 inches long, armed with a lathe that would cut the sound into the disc in real time. When these recorders were used in the field, they really posed a challenge as they had to be kept on a very level surface and not next to or on top of the ground that was prone to vibrate, let's say at a railroad station or on the street. So when the Hindenburg made impact, the sound engineer noticed the ground rumbling and had to very quickly lift the lathe off of the disc and then quickly place it back down to continue the recording. A moment that you can hear and even physically see at the National Archives, where the disc is heavily scratched at that moment when the ship went down.
Well, here it comes, ladies and gentlemen. We're out now outside of the hangar, and what a great sight it is. A thrilling one. It's a marvelous sight. It's coming down out of the sky, pointed directly towards us and toward the mooring mast. The mighty diesel motors just roared, the propellers biting into the air and throwing it back into a gale-like whirlpool. No wonder this great floating palace can travel through the air at such a speed with these powerful motors behind it. The sun is striking the windows of the observation deck on the eastward side and sparkling like glittering jewels on a background of black velvet. And every now and then the propellers are caught in the rays of the sun and their highly polished surfaces reflect circles of gold. Now, the field that we thought active when we first arrived has turned into a moving mass of cooperative action. The landing crews have rushed to the posts and spots, and orders are being passed along, and last-minute preparations are being completed for the moment we have waited for so long. The ship is riding majestically toward us like some great feather, riding as though it was mighty proud of the place it's playing in the world's aviation. The ship is no doubt bustling with activities we can see. Orders are shouted to the crew. The passengers are probably lining the windows looking down at the field ahead of them, getting their glimpse of the mooring mast. And these giant flagships standing here, the American Airlines flagships, waiting to rise into all points in the United States when they get the ship moored. There are a number of important persons on board, and no doubt the new commander, Captain Max Frisch, is thrilled, too, for this is his great moment, the first time he's commanded the Hindenburg. For on previous flights, he acted as the chief officer under Captain Lehman. It's practically standing still now. They've dropped ropes out of the nose of the ship, and it's been taken a hold of down on the field by a number of men. It's starting to rain again. The rain had slacked up a little bit. The back motors of the ship are just holding it just enough to keep it from... It bursts into flame.
It bursts into flame and it's falling. It's crashing. Watch it. Get out of the way. Get it, Charlie. It's crashing terrible. Oh, my. Get out of the way, please. It's burning, bursting into flames, and it's falling on the mooring fast and all the folks between it. This is terrible. This is one of the worst catastrophes in the world. Oh, it's place is 400 or 500 feet into the sky. It's a terrific crash, ladies and gentlemen. The smoke and it's flames now, and the frame is crashing to the ground, not quite to the mooring mast. Oh, the humanity and all the passengers screaming around here. I can't even talk to people. His friends are out there. I can't talk, ladies and gentlemen. Honestly, it's just like a massive smoking wreckage. And everybody can't hardly breathe and talk and scream. Lady, I'm sorry. Honestly, I can hardly breathe. I'm going to step inside while I cannot see it. Charlie, that's terrible. Listen, folks, I'm going to have to stop for a minute because I've lost some voice. This is the worst thing I've ever witnessed.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm back again. I've sort of recovered from the terrific explosion and the terrific crash that occurred just as it was being pulled down to the mooring mast. That's still smoking and flaming and crackling and banging down there. And I don't know how many of the ground crew were under it when it fell. There's not a possible chance for anyone to be saved. The relatives of the people who are waiting here, ready to welcome their loved ones that came off this great ship, are broken up. They're carrying them in to give them first aid and to restore them. Some of them have fainted. And the people are rushing down to the burning ship. The fire trucks have all gone down to see if they can extinguish any of the blaze whatsoever. But the terrible amount of hydrogen gas in it just caused the tail surface broke into flame first. Then there was a terrific explosion, and that followed by the burning of the nose and the crashing nose into the ground, and everybody tearing back at
portions of the recording were copied and rushed to stations and were heard on many the following day. And the moment of impact and Herb Morrison's descriptions of the scene really put this recording among the most famous and most important recordings of the last century, as it captured the sound of a true tragedy and tested the reporter under a tremendous strain with the explosion and the chaos that surrounded him. And while many have heard the shocking moment from that recording, this ending part is often left out.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to stop just a moment. They're needing some help, and I'm going to see if I can't go out and do my part. Just a moment.
Coming up on Tune to Yesterday, this Wednesday night, May 3rd, we have an hour of science fiction for you with episodes of Escape and X-1.
Those flying hypodermics. This is a fine, healthy spot. Mosquitoes as big as hummingbirds.
Oh, careful, son. You're knocking the climate of the capital city of Macedonia.
Yeah, some capital city. One palm tree and a Boy Scout pup tent. Wes, this is the wildest thing we ever did. What if Chuck can't get back?
Chuck Hudson is a man of many parts. Have faith.
Supposing they're putting him in jail, or something might happen to the time unit or the helicopter. We should have gone along.
Do you think they'll do it, Coop?
Who, what?
The United States. Do you think they'll recognize us?
Not if they know that Macedonia is the United States 50,000 years ago.
At 11 o'clock, it's Crime from Indictment and the Crime Club with the story Dead Man Control. On Thursday night, May 4th at 10, drama from the Hallmark Playhouse and the Silver Theater. Then it's horror at 11 with episodes of Inner Sanctum and The Sealed Book. Hear these shows on the air or online this Wednesday, May 3rd and Thursday, May 4th from 10 to midnight on Tune to Yesterday. This Wednesday, May 3rd, is the birthday of one of the best-known and most successful singers in the world, especially on radio. The singer is Bing Crosby. He was born Harry Lillis Crosby in 1903 in Tacoma, Washington, and would grow to become one of radio's biggest stars with his live performances and, of course, the countless amount of recordings. Now, while on the radio, Bing would celebrate his birthday on May 2nd, but as a priest from his hometown would reveal years after his death, his actual birthday is the 3rd of May. Bing Crosby was always a big fan of radio from his on-air start in 1931 when his jazz records were selling like mad, His first big show called 15 Minutes with Bing Crosby in September of that year.
Introducing Bing Crosby. Here is the moment you have been waiting for. The delayed appearance of that sensational baritone Bing Crosby, whose singing has made him the favorite of California through the mediums of the motion pictures, the vaudeville stage, and the radio. It was our announced intention to present Bing Crosby's initial program Monday night, but a severe attack of laryngitis made it impossible for him to appear until tonight.
In terms of radio, from there, he would go on to replace Al Jolson on the Kraft Music Hall. And after leaving that show, he would become part of ABC's lineup as a cornerstone of the relatively new network. And with millions of fans tuned behind him, he also brought something else to the air. Magnetic tape and the technology of recording and playback that was employed by the Nazis during World War II. After it was uncovered, an engineer had the materials shipped back to the States, and Bing would end up financing and profiting greatly from his new Ampex company, which produced reel-to-reel tape and playback machines. With this, he convinced ABC to let him pre-record his shows, which was really unheard of at the time in 1945, and at first, the public was pretty upset about the seemingly disingenuous method of performance, but audiences did warm up to the idea, mostly because it was Bing and the shows did sound good, and Crosby could then tape his show around his schedule of other recordings for records, stage performances, and many other pressing engagements like golf. A short time later, he started working for NBC with the Philco Radio Time program and was in the top five shows in all of radio with around 24 million tuning in each week. And with a song catalog stretching for miles, his signature tune to many is his version of White Christmas. But on radio, he had a theme that he would sing as part of the introduction to his programs called Wear the Blue of the Night. He had a really warm and at times exacting personality on the air in his many appearances. So here now, in honor of his birthday, is a sound portrait of Bing on radio in the 1940s and 50s to just bring you a range of moments from this legendary singer.
When the blue of the night meets the gold of the day, someone waits for me.
The calendar says that spring is upon us, though some sections of the country may doubt it. In such a situation, love and bloom seems indicated. Yeah. Wait. Hold it. Just a minute. It appears the forces of live radio have dropped a viper into the fiddle section.
Let me alone. I'll get it.
Just a minute. Hey. Say, you. Huh? Have you ever played this number before, Bub?
Played it? I made it.
Well, I should have known. Jack Benny. Well, I certainly expected you tonight, Jack. I expected you over, but I didn't expect to find you in the orchestra.
I can't understand it. I've never played so poorly.
Oh, cheer up, Jack. Sure you have.
Fine. Listen, I've been thinking of this for years, and I might as well come right out and say it. What do all the women see in Bing Crosby? Look at him.
I'll tell you something else, what? Bing. You've never made a phonograph record that I haven't heard at least 8,000 times.
Well, you like my records.
My wife likes your records.
Well, now, purely as a point of gratitude, may I say I like your wife.
Yes, you may, but I tell you, Bing, you don't know what it's like to live in a house that's perpetually plagued by Crosby.
Oh. No, Bogey, you just pull up a chair and tell Uncle Bing all about it.
Well, now, Uncle Bing, every night after dinner, promptly at 8:30, my wife drags me into the living room and puts a whole stack of your records on the machine.
This takes place every night promptly at 8:30, huh?
Yes, she calls it time for Bingsy. Time for Bingsy, isn't that sickening?
Well, no, I don't think so, no. Tell me more about time for Bingsy.
May I elbow in here, boys?
Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Lorraine Bacall.
Get your shopping done, baby?
Mm-hmm. I got Bing's new recording of At Last, At Last.
Well, let me hold it for you, dear. Now, let's see. What is this record, anyway? At Last, At Last. Bing Crosby. Oh, I dropped it.
DeForest Bogart, you did that on purpose.
What's this, DeForest?
Now you've done it. You went and said it in public. You told
him. Say, how about this Humphrey DeForest Bogart?
Never mind, Harry Lillis. Yeah.
How did you know his real name was Harry?
How did I know? I knew that kid when he was a tenor.
Really?
Sure. Sure, he didn't use his own name then. Called himself Morton Downey. Sings with Paul Whiteman's band.
He was with Paul Whiteman.
Oh, Whiteman let him go, huh?
See, he seems to be doing very well these days. Has his own radio show, you know.
Sure, that's one of the things I told him to do. Harry, I says, Harry, what you ought to do is have your own radio program, I says, Harry. Own your own package show, I says.
Well, Woodpecker McGee. Yeah. Imagine seeing you after all these years. Why don't you and Molly do one of your old tunes right now? If I can find a hammer somewhere, I'll accompany you.
Oh, I'm game if Molly is. How about it, Snooky?
Okay. Put down that hammer, Bing, and sing with us,
yeah,
will
I'll
you?
I'll be right in there.
What do we sing, Harry?
Oh, how about Dear Old Girl, or I Had a Dream of You, or...
I Had a Dream, dear.
You got the lead?
I think so. I Had a Dream, dear. If anything happens, we'll go into Tipperary.
I had a dream, dear. You had one. Mine was the best dream because it was of you.
Nice touch, don't you think?
Come, sweetheart, tell me now is the time you tell me.
That so I can get that little fill in.
And I'll tell you mine.
Ring, boom, 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 ring, boom, 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 mine.
I'll never forget that big paratrooper built like Superman's big brother, and he talked like Benny the Creep. I'm heading for the ship's theater late for a show, and this boy stops me.
Hey.
Who, me?
Yeah. You're the groaner, ain't you?
Well, I'm sometimes referred to as such, yeah. Hi, son.
Sing me White Christmas.
Well, I'm late. I'm on a forced march to the theater downstairs.
I said, sing me White Christmas.
Well, I'm due at the show. Besides, I can't sing White Christmas without a guitar.
Get a guitar.
Huh?
I says, get a guitar. Sing me White Christmas.
Well, look, I'm busy. It's late, and I'm due at the show. I got no guitar. I'll see you around. Well, the next day, I'm heading for the British captain's quarters. We're going to bust a scone or a crumpet or two, he and I. And this is the big boat. But whose pretty puss do I have to bump into?
Hey. Hey, you.
Hmm?
Where's the guitar?
Well, Buck Harris is our guitar man. He's down below decks getting ready to go on.
Well, go get him. I want to hear White Christmas.
Well, listen, son, I'm awfully sorry,
shut up. You never was any good in the first place.
Well, now, just...
Hi, what are you doing?
Hello, Buck. Look, this... Can you unsling that overgrown uke there, will you? This guy wants to hear White Christmas.
You mean you're going to sing it for just one guy?
Play the ting, you.
And you, fella, just stand up there with your back to the wall. I'm going to sing this thing right into your china.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, with every Christmas card I write. May your days be merry and bright, and may all your Christmases be white.
this Friday night on Tune to Yesterday at 10 o'clock on May 5th. It's an hour of sitcoms with the great Gildersleeve and Burns and Allen. Then an hour of adventure with a Lux Radio Theater adapting Alice in Wonderland.
You could be a little more gentle, you know.
Oh, who said that?
I did, of course.
The doorknob?
Oh, it's quite all right, but you did give me quite a turn.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry, but I was following a...
Rather good, what? Doorknob? Turn?
Oh, please help me, sir. I'm looking for a white rabbit, and he must have gone through your door. So, if you don't...
Oh, sorry, you're much too big to go through. Simply impassable.
Oh, you mean impossible?
Oh, no. Impassable.
Now, really...
At 10 o'clock this Saturday night, it's Mystery with the Secrets of Scotland Yard and the Whistler shows. Then an hour of true history from three programs, Freedom USA, Treasury Salute, with a salute to Jane Addams, and That Was the Year, profiling 1909. You can hear these shows this Friday, May 5th, and Saturday, May 6th, from 10 to midnight on Tune to Yesterday, live on the air in Central and Northern New York, or streaming live online at wbarvo.org. Now, in the last TTY Dialer podcast, I had asked you to write me and tell me about where you listen to old-time radio, and I got some really great responses, and thanks for taking the time to write. A listener, Spencer from Campbell, New York, wrote in with, "Often in the summer, I listen to episodes on my iPad with a Bluetooth speaker. I do chores and work around the house walking around with a speaker. Wow, that sounds ridiculous. Oh well, it works." Thanks a lot for writing in, Spencer. You know, I do the same thing with an external speaker in my smartphone sometimes as well. Maybe not so crazy. Also, a listener from the area, Chuck, wrote in to say, "I like to listen to the podcast in my car during the drive home. As luck would have it, the radio programs are just about the exact length as my drive. Also, I like to listen to the podcast on my Bluetooth earbuds while I work around the house or do yard work. It just makes these tasks more enjoyable." And you know, I agree completely. It does help you get things done around the house. And thanks a lot to everyone who wrote in this week, letting me know where you listen to old-time radio or this podcast. They were a lot of fun to read. Now, a question for next week. Tell me what your top three favorite shows are. You're dropped off on a desert island with a cassette player and three tapes. What shows would be on them from before 1962? And this is assuming you have all the food and water in the world and you're not worried about that, but maybe just an unexpected vacation. What would your three top shows be? Let me know. Just email me, mark@wrvo.org. That's mark@wrvo.org. I'm looking forward to hearing from you, and I hope you're looking forward to the shows coming up this week on Tune to Yesterday. And I'll be back online next week with another TTY Dialer.